Hello listeners, and welcome back to our seventh and penultimate episode in our PyeongChang 2018 special series, ahead of the games starting in a few days' time. While many eyes will be on defending skeleton champion Lizzie Arnold, it could well be her teammate Laura Dees who ends up on the medal podium come the conclusion of the games. I spoke to Laura about a variety of topics, including not getting selected for Sochi and how she's bounced back from that, what it's like training with and competing alongside Arnold, and how her previous equestrian experiences helped to overcome the fear she felt on her first run on a sled back in 2009. So make sure you stick around for what I can guarantee is a fantastic interview. So welcome back, listeners, to another in our Sportsbill specials ahead of the Winter Olympic Games, where today I'm delighted to announce that we're being joined by none other than a skeleton racer, Laura Dees. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
I guess it's quite an obvious question, which I'll try and avoid. So you're a skeleton athlete. I'm not going to say how did you get involved in it, but we know that you got involved through the Girls for Gold scheme. So if you could maybe start by just talking us through how you got involved in that and why you ended up with the skeleton of all the sports that were on offer.
Yeah, sure. So back in 2008, the UK Sport decided to run this talent search called Girls for Gold. And it was the first time that a search had been done on a sort of national scale to try and recruit athletes into the sport. And so I heard about it through my brother heard about it on the radio and told me about it and basically persuaded me to put myself forward for someone who'd already sort of done a lot of different sports and been able to, you know, to a relatively good level, and I hadn't necessarily got as far as I wanted with any of them. So he thought I was an ideal candidate for this sort of scheme. So I took myself to a testing day in Manchester, and basically they put me through a lot of different tests to determine speed, strength, power, endurance, as well as the basic sort of biometric stuff like height and weight and leg length relative to arm span and that kind of thing. So I went through all these tests, and then I went home and sort of waited for the phone to ring or for a letter to come to the post. And then a few weeks later, I got a letter saying, how do you fancy coming and having a go at skeleton down at the University of Bath? So I wasn't expecting it at all. But I just thought, you know, why not? Let's see what it's all about. So went down and gave it a go, and just it went from there, really.
And how did that first session down at Bath go for you?
It was interesting, I think. So we were being introduced to how to push a sled, so the very basics of running bent over, pushing quite a heavy object, which is a relatively technical skill. So I think really what they were looking at was not how good anybody was in one session. It was more to do with, could you listen to instructions? Could you pick things up quickly? Were you receptive to change and that kind of thing? So over the winter, I think that the numbers were whittled down from, I think I'm right in saying it was something like a couple of hundred, down to about 10 or 12 of us who were then taken on to an ice camp to do actually the sport itself for real in March 2009. And that was a real experience.
And what's made it such an experience for you?
Well, I think for the most part, I didn't really know what we were letting ourselves in for. I mean, I'd seen a footage of Shelley Rudman sliding at the 2006 Olympics in Turin, and I'd watched it and thought, oh, cool, you know, this. I love adrenaline sports. I'd always been into horse riding and skiing, and so I thought, you know, oh, this could be a really good fit for me. But you don't really know until you try whether you're actually going to get on with it. So we've been through quite a long selection process before we even got to actually try the sliding bit of the sport. And I remember really vividly being sort of put on the sled. We were only going from about two-thirds of the way up the track. So we were put on the sled and sort of gently pushed off. And we weren't given a huge amount of instruction other than how important it was to hold position and, you know, literally just hold on and try and remember which quarters were which. And I think because nobody had ever done anything remotely similar to it before, it was a bit of a... I went into the first run thinking, oh, you know, this is going to be fun. How hard can it be? And just going down the track. And I just remember the feeling of the sled just picking up speed and going faster and faster and faster. Just becoming really aware that there was no way of slowing or stopping down until I got to the end. And that really, all the only thing that I could do that was in my control was just not fall off. Just hold on really tight and just try and make it to the bottom. So yeah, it was a very unique experience, and I think it was a really testing one, because having gone through that first run where you had no idea what's coming, you know, what the experience is going to be like, to get into the bottom realizing it's absolutely terrifying, you're probably going to hurt yourself, but if you want to carry on and become good at the sport, you've got to keep doing it over and over again. So that was the toughest thing about it, I think, was realising how much of a mountain it was to climb to become any good in a short space of time.
And you mentioned earlier you're a bit of an adrenaline junkie, some might say. Did that sort of help you overcome sort of that initial fear and make you want to go up and have another go?
I think so. I mean, my main sport before I went to the concert process was eventing. It's a really extreme sport because it's consisted of three different disciplines on horseback. So you've got the dressage, which is all about control, discipline, obedience. And then you've got the cross country, which is really about bravery. You're galloping at solid obstacles like logs and hedges cross country, and you've got to really trust that you've made the right plan and that the horse is going to do what you want it to do. And so I think that feeling of putting trust in a plan and sort of accepting the nerves and the adrenaline really put me in a good place for transferring. A lot of it's really similar. You're having to think very fast, maybe make a split-second change of plan, feel what's happening underneath you, take in a lot of information all at once. So there's a lot of transferable skills. And I think the funniest thing is, for a lot of people, skeletons, most extreme thing they'd ever done.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I remember my mum's reaction was actually quite, oh good, so you finally decided to do something less dangerous, because actually statistically eventing is far more dangerous than skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was quite unorthodox from that point of view as well.
That was also going on to my next question. So what was the reaction of family and friends when you said that you were, you know, going to go and do the skeleton?
Well, I think the nice thing about the coming onto the programme was that it was very structured. So as opposed to me going out sort of riding, going to competitions and trying to make it by myself, I think the fact that I was now part of the UK Sport funded programme with a clear pathway, a clear goal at the end of it, to go to the Olympics, meant that I think, you know, particularly my dad, who was probably worried that I didn't have a clear path of what I was going to do in my future, was very pleased about it, because you know, you could see that there was a clear sort of pathway through and that I was going to be well looked after. So I think, yeah, it was a positive step. I think people were intrigued, because, you know, when a skeleton's a lot better known now than it was when I started, and, you know, when I was telling people what I was doing back then, for the most part, you know, the first part was actually explaining what skeleton was.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the sport's come quite a long way in a short space of time, and now a lot of people, you know, instantly recognise it, and when you tell them you do skeleton, they're like, oh, cool.
And you mentioned there the structured programme. Did that also mean spending quite a lot of time away from home on camps and stuff like that?
Yeah, initially the first big move I had to do was down to Bath, because that's where the training centre is.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fairly big upheaval, but luckily I do have family and friends in the Bath area, so I wasn't completely on my own. But yeah, the nature of it being a winter sport and the fact that we don't have our own track means that we are travelling for a lot of the year. We're away typically from October through to March, with the odd week back in the UK here and there. So it's a demanding sort of lifestyle, and I'm quite lucky that I've got friends and family and my other half who are very understanding of the way I live my life and
Is that something you enjoy, though, the fact that you get to go to all these different countries and, you know, experience different cultures as well as doing your training?
Yes, I think it's cool, you know, that we get to go to these different places, and a lot of the time we're visiting places with really great histories behind them, you know. For instance, I've just come back from Samaritans, which is where riding sports were born, so to be able to see places like that every year is really cool. But on the other hand, I think there's sometimes a perception that the travelling life is glamorous, and we spend our whole time going from one glam location to another, and it couldn't be further from the truth, really. I mean, there's a lot of it takes its toll after a while, you know, travelling week in, week out, with quite a tight schedule. And I think I'm lucky that our team is we're very professional, and we're very close. It's like a second family, really, because we do spend so much time together. I mean, I spend a lot more time with my skeleton team than I do with my family over the winter, so it's quite an intense environment at times. But I think we, as I said, we're quite professional, and we know how to sort of be with each other for long periods of time without going mad, which is important.
And I guess a lot of that time is spent on the World Cup circuit, competing in different events. In your first World Cup season, 2014-15, I think I'm correct in saying you finished fifth overall with two medals. How was that for you, sort of your first foray onto the international scene?
Yeah, it was a really exciting time for me, actually, because it was just the Sochi Olympics, which I just missed out on going to. And I think the sport was sort of transitioning. There was a new sort of crop of athletes coming through, and I had, you know, I was so motivated by the fact that I'd missed out on Sochi that I really wanted to get on to World Cup, because I'd never been on the World Cup circuit before, but then also, you know, prove that I had a right to be there, and that I could compete, and you know, I had potential for the future. So my second ever World Cup race in Calgary, which is a track I've never been to before, I managed to win a silver medal. And I just remember thinking at that day, you know, it was a huge moment for me, because I just thought, you know, yeah, I can do this. I do deserve to be here. And, you know, maybe I do have a future at top level in skeleton. So, yeah, I think that season was a huge turning point, and really has been the springboard for the rest of the Olympic cycle.
And was missing out on Sochi then for you not necessarily, obviously it was a disappointment, but also a massive drive to make you want to get better and then achieve the World Cup place?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I don't know how things might have turned out differently if I had qualified. I can't say, you know, whether I'd still be doing skeleton if I'd been to Sochi. You know, I have no idea what my motivation would have been. But having missed out, it was very clear to me that it brought into very sharp focus how much I did actually want to go to the Olympics, and it really refocused me and spurred me on. It put that fire in my belly, and it meant I really did then refocus and go into this Olympic cycle thinking, I don't just want to be here, I want to be contending for a medal.
And speaking of medals, we'll skip forward to 2015-16 now, when you won your first World Cup gold. Talk us through that. How did that feel?
That was a really, really special day, because it was the opening World Cup of the season, and it was at a track in Germany that I'd never had any success on in the past, and I really didn't click with it. I didn't like it. I'd crashed there before. I'd had some really bad experiences. It was a track where I didn't do well in the GB selection races, which in Olympic year, which was a big deal, it probably, you know, was the biggest factor in me not going to the Olympics. So I had all this sort of negative history with the track, and then got there and had a really good training week, and then on race day it just came together, and I managed to put together two really good runs, and I think I shocked everybody. I mean, I shocked myself, and I don't think anybody was expecting for a Brit to win on the German track where there's a massive home advantage, and it's quite a technical and a track that frightens people. So it was, for me, it was a real big statement of intent. You know, the fact that I went and sort of was a real underdog and managed to come away with a gold medal, it sort of cemented my that feeling of confidence that I deserved to be on World Cup and that I was someone to be reckoned with.
Of course, and certainly now we're going to skip forward to Pyeongchang itself. A lot of people have got you, you know, one of the favourites to pick up a medal alongside, you know, the likes of Lizzie Arnold and some of the Europeans. And you've had a fairly consistent and a pretty impressive World Cup season. How are you feeling ahead of the Games?
I think that the word consistency is the key, because I think that the fact that I have been able to put down, you know, consistent race runs, you know, so on the average World Cup race, it's two runs, mm-hmm. and in skeleton, all of your race runs count. You don't get to discount a bad score. So it's very important to be able to back up one good run with another good run.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're at the Olympics and you have to do that suddenly over four runs over 2 days, and that, you know, that becomes even more important again. And I think on a track that's as technical as the one in Pyeongchang, that will stand me in really good stead.
Of course, and unfortunately, however, before the Games, there's been a lot of negativity sort of surrounding Russia and whether they're going to compete and sort of the potential tensions between the two Korean nations. Is that something that you as athletes take much notice of, or is it you've just got to focus on what you're doing?
Me, I like to be aware of what's going on, but at the same time, I know that, you know, my personal thoughts and opinions aren't going to change the political landscape. So, really becoming overly worried or focused on things like that is ends up being counterproductive. And the last thing I want to do is sabotage my own performance by getting distracted by things like that. And, you know, I think I've got total confidence in Team GB, and I know that when we're out there, we'll have the best people looking after us. So, you know, I think the best thing that I can do is just focus on winning a medal and leave the experts to the sort of political stuff.
And of course, with the whole Russian thing, you yourself would just missed out on a World Cup bronze due to a Russian athlete, and I know skeleton has come under some criticism, but for you guys as athletes, is it just a case of you want to just go out there and show, actually, you know, skeleton is a fantastic sport full of fantastic athletes, and just sort of move it back to the positive of just respecting the sport?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that is what Pyeongchang will do. I would really love it for people to watch skeleton and the other Olympic sports and be inspired by performances. And, you know, it's an incredible sport. We're travelling at 80, 90 miles an hour, hitting, you know, 5 degrees of pressure in the corners, having to react and think super quickly, you know, as we go down. And I think I would love for that to be the overriding impression that people get of the sport, is actually how amazing it is, rather than the politics.
And you mentioned there just how amazing the sport is, and you've done thousands upon thousands of runs, but what does it feel like, you know, going down a track at 80 miles an hour? Is there a way you could describe it?
Well, when I was doing my first ever run, I remember the feeling of having to stop myself from putting my hands out in front of me, because my body was telling me that I was falling, and so your natural instinct is to kind of put your hands and your legs out and try and stop yourself. So mm-hmm. if you can imagine that feeling of sort of falling for a minute, with the sensation of the ice underneath you and the speed picking up and being able to sort of feel the wind rushing past your shoulders and the pressures coming on and off your body as you come in and out of the corners, that's kind of what it's like, really. And always what you're trying to do as a skeleton athlete is kind of put that the fear of how fast and dangerous it is to one side, and just unfocus on the plan that you have to get down the track safely and quickly.
Of course, and one final question, because I know you're a push for time. You're training and competing with the current Olympic champion, Lizzie Arnold. what is it like to work with her and alongside her?
It is great. I mean, we go back a long way and we're good friends, and it's very nice just to have somebody that you have a real good friendship with on circuit, because it's a very intense environment. And I think to be able to step away from the track at the end of the day and sort of put the kettle on and have a cup of tea and discuss the day with her is great. But we also support each other on the track as well. We're both part of a wider team that's trying to produce great performances. So, we have very limited time to work out the track. Any given week, we'd normally only have 6 training runs before racing. So you've got less than 6 minutes, basically, to try and figure out what your plan's going to be for race day. So quite often, it's a team effort to figure that plan out in time for race day. And myself and Lizzie, we go back a long way. We came into the programme both through the Girls for Gold scheme in 2008. So, we've known each other a long time, and I think we both recognise and respect how hard it is to maintain yourself at an elite level for so long. So I think, we've got a lot of respect for each other and how we go about sort of carrying ourselves through the sport, if you like. And we're very supportive of each other. And I'm really looking forward to actually being able to go and experience the Olympics with her, because that was one of the harder parts about Sochi, actually, was the fact that we weren't able to be there together. So it'll be really nice to finally make that happen.
And I know you probably don't want to think too far ahead, but is it a possibility we could see a British, two British girls on the skeleton podium?
I don't think it's unreasonable to think that could happen. I'm definitely there to compete for a medal, and obviously Lizzie is as well. She's defended her title, so we both have stepped on that podium plenty of times, and I know we can both definitely do it again when it matters. So yeah, I don't think that's unrealistic. Target.
Oh, well, that's a perfect note to end on, and thank you so much for coming on the show, Laura. We really appreciate it, and all the best.
Thanks so much.
Hello, listeners. Alistair here, just tagging on to the end of this special episode with Will and Laura. Hope everyone enjoyed it and found it suitably interesting, and I'd just like to extend my own thanks to Laura for coming on and being a part of our Winter Olympics specials. Don't forget, you can always follow us on social media for more. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and we are on Instagram, and you can always send us feedback via our email address, which is sportspielpod@gmail.com. That is our penultimate episode, done and dusted, but we are rounding off our Winter Olympics specials tomorrow with a cracking episode featuring British figure skaters Penny Coombs and Nick Buckland.